Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by the Something Offbeat podcast. We bring you strange tales out of Odyssey stations from coast to coast. I'm your Roundup host, Lauren Berry. For our peek into the unusual this week, we're headed to the seashore. Our first stop is Riviera Beach, Florida, where we'll hear about the lucky recovery of a fanny pack filled with $30,000. You'll never guess where the money came from. Then we'll sail to New Orleans, Louisiana, along the Gulf Coast, to check on the global gathering of tall ships. Think pirate ships with those big masts and tall sails. All for the 250th anniversary of the United States this summer. In the second half of the show, things get a bit scarier. We'll learn about a surprising summer hazard, beach and cafe umbrellas that can turn deadly. Then we'll listen to a conversation about whether the Dead Sea is doomed to dry up soon. Here's Bob Rose and Greg Cassidy of the Bob Rose Show out of Odyssey Station 97.3 The Sky in Gainesville, Florida. They're talking about a story that proves that while you gotta catch 'em all, it's also important to give them back sometimes. I promise that Pokemon reference will make sense in just a moment. Keep listening.
A guy in Riviera Beach, Florida, is in the bathroom at a Wawa. Oh, they're pretty busy there. And spots a guy's bag who he left, you know, the guy left it behind, apparently. And, man, he tried to catch up to him and looking for him because he left his fanny pack hanging on a rail. Said, I saw it, I grabbed it, tried to locate the person, unable to find the owner. And then I opened it to try to find the person's identification so I could get it back to them. What did he find? $30,000.
That's
$30,000 in cash.
Oh, my goodness. This is where your morals, mores, principles, everything has to kick in.
I'd be like, I'm so happy I found your $4,000 in cash. I am so happy.
Yeah, it was on the ground.
Somebody looked like they started to go through it. I don't know. I shoot them away.
Uh-huh.
Gosh, that's bad to even think like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but funny.
Come on, snap out of it.
Yeah, come
Ow.
On. Come on, Bob.
All right.
Be a good guy.
He said, yeah, I knew the money belonged to somebody else, so he brought it to their attention. And this was real money. This wasn't like money laundering. You think, oh, $30,000 in cash. What are you up to, pal?
Yeah.
He sold his whole Pokemon collection for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, his whole Pokemon collection. Imagine that, $30,000 in Pokemon.
Somebody handed him $30,000 in cash for his Pokemon card.
Yes.
Okay.
But it gets even better.
Yeah.
The amount was going to be helping to pay for his sister's medical procedure.
Oh,
yeah.
Can you imagine how he felt when he realized he lost it? Then?
Yeah.
All the more so.
Yeah.
Oh, heartbreaking.
Well, he was crying when he was getting the money back.
I'll bet.
And, wow. Yep, he said, that's a good man.
Yeah.
And that is.
But that's not always the way these things turn out.
Yep. And his name is Luis Salazar. And he is, he's today's kind of unsung hero.
I like that.
Although he's getting sung a little bit.
Well, that's all right. He should be.
Because he was in Wawa's.
And it's a good Florida man story. We don't get too many of those.
We'll take what we can get.
Yep.
As a good deed was melting hearts in Riviera Beach, a blast from the past was headed to the harbors of New Orleans. Fully rigged boats with tall masts that look like they're from a painting or a historical movie arrived from all over the world this week for a summer celebrating the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Tall ships were a key feature of bicentennial celebrations 50 years ago. Now, Sail 250 plans to celebrate the nation's sestercentennial with the largest ever flotilla of tall ships from around the world.
Tell me about Sail 250 for people that have no idea what this is. Explain it from the beginning, please.
Well, Tommy, thank you for that. We are proud to be the inaugural host city for Sail 250, which is part of America 250, the nationwide commemoration of the United States' 250th anniversary.
That's Mark Romig, a senior advisor for New Orleans & Company and the lead for Sail 250. He joined Tommy Tucker from Odyssey Station WWL in New Orleans to discuss the flotilla plans.
Is one ship not already in town?
Yeah, actually, the Swedish tall ship, the Gladden, came in last week, a little early. They wanted to give their crew some shore leave, so they sent them back over to Sweden, and they kept the skeletal crew on the vessel. But they'll all be coming back today and tomorrow. So the Gladden is in, and they're down there at Goldring Wildenberg Riverfront Park. And then the Trent, the British ship, the Trent came in a day before yesterday. So they're down at around Thalia Street. So they came in early. We're taking good care of them, but the majority of the ships start coming in tomorrow. And then the majority of the tall ships will start coming up the river. And you'll be able to see those beginning around 8 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. And they'll be coming in about an hour apart as they come to that Bienville Street docking area and get moored, lined up, and get ready to host our visitors.
So with the seamen that were on the ship and left, no scurvy or anything like that, right?
No, all good. All checked out. And I tell you, we're going to have about 3,000 crew members from around the world. Wow. In New Orleans celebrating our 250th, but also getting a good taste of our hospitality, which, you know, no one does it better than us.
Absolutely. So tell me how people can get involved with this and the ships. Can you see them from the Crest City Connection? I'm not advising people to take their eyes off the road. What's the best way to see the ships?
I think the best way to see the ships is to go down to the Goldring Wildenberg Riverfront Park, which, you know, has been opened into an expanded park area to view the ships right across from the, you know, the French Quarter area of the Bienville Street Wharf area will be where you can actually board the tall ships for tours beginning Thursday and running through Sunday. And those tours will run, once the ship gets docked, the ships become ready to go the afternoon of that Thursday, but all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then down toward Julia Street, where the large amphibious aircraft carrier, the Kearsarge, will be docked, along with Coast Guard and the ship from Great Britain, the British ship Trent, and the Friesland from the Netherlands. So you'll have an amazing—excuse me, the Friesland actually will be docked down at Pullen Avenue. It's the Mohawk, and the Trent will be down toward Thalia Street. But you'll have 12 ships total. It's the largest gathering of ships in my lifetime and the port like this. And again, just another magnificent way for the family and your friends to come down and see these wonderful tall ships and great hulls, the military vessels.
It seems like it reminds me of back in 1976 when I was just a mere lad, a very young lad, when the ships were sailing into New York Harbor. It's going to be that kind of thing, like almost, but not all at the same time, right?
That's correct. You'll have we basically have used every bit of dock space along the East Bank from Pullen Avenue all the way up to the Mississippi River Bridge for docking these magnificent ships. And again, it's the beginning of the commemoration. So we are the inaugural port. The ships will leave our city on June 1st and head up the East Coast and be seen in Norfolk and then Baltimore, New York for July 4th for a very large celebration of many, many, many more ships, and then end in Boston, Massachusetts in middle part of July. And we're just, you know, so honored that we were chosen to be one of these five ports to help celebrate our maritime history.
It's a lot more than just the ships, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of activity going on to ensure that not only the crew members are having a good time here in New Orleans, but also touching a number of exhibits that are happening in New Orleans to discuss the 250th anniversary of our nation. The Historic New Orleans Collection, the Louisiana State Museum have wonderful exhibits discussing not only Louisiana, but New Orleans' impact on the birth of our nation. And then, of course, you know, you can't do it in any other city but New Orleans. We're going to have a seafood cook-off. We're going to be pairing the cook specialist or culinary specialist from each of the ships with a local chef. And Lieutenant Governor has given us some Louisiana seafood to put into their menu, recipes, and we're going to come up with some great dishes, and then they'll have some judges judging to see who did the best. And that'll be on Sunday down at Spanish Plaza at the Delacroix restaurant. The Kearsarge will start seeing guests on Thursday, and Thursday afternoon after the tall ships are all safely docked, we will start seeing some tours on the tall ships, and then, of course, all day Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They'll be staged as they leave out on Monday, with only one ship remaining till Tuesday, and that's the Libertad. But the blessing of the fleet will occur, and it'll be a fitting way for us to do a symbolic blessing of all of the ships as they start departing. But that'll be another exciting opportunity to watch the ships as they leave New Orleans and head down the Mississippi River into the Gulf and then move on their way up the East Coast.
As we get closer to Independence Day, there will be more events tied to the ships all along the East Coast. Now, stay tuned for more Seaside Voyages on this Weird News Roundup. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. When I think about risks associated with summer, I think about getting a really bad sunburn, or blisters, maybe sharks, and unfortunately, violent crimes. But I have to say, umbrellas have never crossed my mind. That's until I heard this story while listening to the Dana and Parks show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City. I have to warn you, if you have kids with you or anyone sensitive, this upcoming description is quite graphic.
Story here from the New York Post. A female diner was killed in a freak accident.
Oh, we have to talk about this.
In front of her family.
Ugh.
When an umbrella flew through the air and severed the artery in her neck, according to authorities in South Carolina. Dana Weinger, 56 years old, was eating Saturday with her husband and other family members when she was killed at the Driftwood Grill home of Lazy Gator in Somerton, South Carolina. Quoting here from the coroner, it was a strong, strong wind like a microburst that came through and knocked... Not just the umbrella, it knocked all the furniture and other debris came onto where they were sitting.
I might want to bring this back a little later in the program, and here's why. While rare, I no longer trust those umbrellas. Not on a beach, not on a patio.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things, if you've ever worked in a restaurant atmosphere, one of the things most people don't realize is how extraordinarily heavy those umbrellas are. That being said, in high winds, this is not anywhere near the first time this has happened, Scott. It happens in restaurants. It happens on the beach. I don't know what the answer is, if there's even a slight chance for a gust of wind in the forecast. That's why you'll see signs at restaurants that say you must ask for staff assistance to raise the umbrella.
Right. I was at a rooftop bar over the weekend yesterday afternoon, and it was insanely windy. And I remember when I used to work at Panera, if the umbrellas were even moving slightly, like if there was enough wind to just kind of rotate them, we would go and take them down. And it was, I think, four umbrellas in a row, and we had the very last one, and they were swaying back and forth.
Yes.
I just stood up and held on to it because I was not about to die. But nobody came to take them down.
For fear that they would be lifted up and impale someone?
Yeah, I mean, those systems aren't perfect. They're held in there with a screw tight situation at the bottom, but the more they wiggle back and forth, that screw job that's holding it in gets looser and looser, and one upburst, and all of a sudden your artery has been impaled in your neck by a flying umbrella.
The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission, because of this, now endorses a strict standard for these types of umbrellas, not only the manufacturing, but also the anchoring of this. If you look this up, Scott,
I'm not laughing.
There is some reporting that globally there's around 1 million injuries and deaths a year because of these things. It's prolific enough that when you look into it, the first things that start popping up are the lawyer websites.
For umbrella
Scott,
death.
Scott or severe injuries.
You type in "can an umbrella" and the first thing Google brings up is "kill me."
And the answer is
from the Herald, from the Herald Miami, and this is a few years ago. This common household item is killing millions of people. They are reporting 2 million deaths globally a year.
No way.
Scott, I swear to you.
No way.
I saw the number 2 million quite a while.
I bet.
Quite a bit.
And I couldn't help but notice when we were in Cancun in early April, you know, you go to the pool and there are the umbrellas and they're all tied up and everything. If you even try to touch the umbrella, okay, to lift it up, to shade your little pool chairs. The staff will come running over.
We got it, we got it.
You are not allowed to touch the umbrellas yourself.
This says the most dangerous type is the type found at the beach because their size and screw-like bases meant to keep the umbrella upright in the sand become deadly weapons on a windy day.
According to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, there are around 3,000 hospitalizations from umbrella accidents in the U.S. alone every year. To stay safe, people should keep large umbrellas closed when conditions are very windy and make sure they're secured safely if outside. Next, we're heading out of the U.S. and making our way to the Dead Sea, a landlocked salt lake between Jordan and Israel in the Middle East. In recent years, the Dead Sea has been getting drier and smaller. A decade ago, the BBC reported that it was already shrinking at an alarming rate. Just this week, CNN reported that it recedes about 4 feet every year. Here's the Adam and Jordana Show out of Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities with more.
The lowest, David, what's the word I'm looking
it's
for?
It's like the lowest point below sea level on the world.
Below sea level on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
On the 1,400 feet below sea level. So like a mountain.
Like down.
Inverted.
Yep.
Yes, that's right. It's one of the world's saltiest water bodies, 10 times saltier than the ocean. It makes the water there, if you've ever been, I've been many times to the Dead Sea, you can float in the water. And you don't have to, not on top, you can sit in it, basically. And you can read a newspaper with your hands and have your feet out of the water.
Yeah, because it's so salty that you become buoyant.
That's right. It's so dense. It is really an extraordinary experience. And now, I'm reading this morning that it's dying. The Dead Sea is shrinking. It's just drying up. And why? Well, human activities, climate change, they do take a heavy toll. But over the past 5 decades, its surface area has shrunk by roughly a third. And you can see sinkholes, you can see, you know, obviously like salt pits at the bottom of it. I don't know if we can bring it back. And I'm sure this has happened many times during the Earth's history, where you have bodies of water and then, of course, they dry up and they become something else. Every year it is shrinking. So I say this to you because I now am hearing about this for the first time. You should go and experience the Dead Sea, and you should float in the Dead Sea. There are plans to try to save it, but sometimes we don't care about the environment and they're not always great plans. It is kind of a treasure. Like, it's the only place like it in the world. You floated in the Dead Sea, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what that was like?
I do. I just remember laying on my back. And like you said, you can have both of your feet and both your hands out of the water and your head, obviously, and you're not sinking. And it's a extraordinary feeling. And you can feel the water on your skin feels like distinctively different.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a extraordinary thing. Do you think, Jordana, that it should be saved? Because the things they would have to do to save it, I mean, a lot of the water in that area is used for irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
So that water could go there, but then you can't grow as many crops. And whatever else you do, I mean, the reality is the impacts of whatever you do to save a body of water like that also have other implications. So, like, how much should be put towards saving the Dead Sea?
That's such a good question. A lot of it is man-made, the problems that we're having.
Yeah.
You know, water that gets diverted to neighboring countries like Syria and Jordan and Israel, you know, to from the Jordan River. By the way, the Jordan River is its main tributary. And because the Jordan River now has to, you know, is drinking water for people and crops, you know, obviously it's not feeding the Dead Sea as much.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those people need water at some point, but I don't know if it should be.
So you say it's unlike any other place on Earth, which is partially true. Mm-hmm. However, there is a place in California called the Salton Sea that I visited that has a not dissimilar history. The Salton Sea has actually like been a sea and then drained several times in the last 100 years, and for a while
but it comes back.
Well, it comes back due to human intervention. Like the Colorado River is diverted in so many different ways that it came back for a while, and it was actually built up, I think it was in the 70s, as like kind of this resort area, and people were like water skiing and hanging out there. But then it started to get saltier and saltier and saltier and shrink and shrink and shrink. And now if you go there, you can still visit the Salton Sea today. It's shrinking. You see the evidence of all of these resorts that used to be there that are just in decay. And it's just a place that's been forgotten. And people, like, it's no longer a place anyone lives or goes. And it's just a place that used to be this beautiful lake and has been abandoned. And is that what the Dead Sea is going to become?
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup presented by Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to The Bob Rose Show out of 97.3 The Sky in Gainesville, Tommy Tucker out of WWL in New Orleans, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, and The Adam and Jordana Show out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities. You can find these programs, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.